Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is a good friend of mine named Chris Masder. Chris is a two-time Olympic luge athlete, a seven-time national champion, and has been ranked as high as third in the world in luge. Luge is a sport where you ride in a sled feet first down an icy maze at about 95 miles an hour, and there's enormous risk of injury and even death in some circumstances. So the reason that I set up the podcast in the first place and the first topic of this podcast was fear and how to overcome it. And you'll hear me tell a story about the first time that I met Chris, seeing him do a gainer off of an 80-foot cliff. I know that all of us experience fear in some area or all areas of our life, most of us on a frequent basis. And so I'm always curious how people are able to take action despite feeling fear. And Chris does that every single day in his training in a very big way. So I was really interested to hear his perspective on that. Other than that, it's just incredibly impressive anyone that's able to not only go to the Olympics, but go there multiple times. On February 10th and 11th, Chris will be competing in Korea for his third Olympics in a row. And I wanted to know, how did he get all the way to the top? How do you compete with the best of the best and work your way all the way to the top of a certain discipline? And then how do you stay there? What are the habits and tactics that you have to use to get there and to stay there? And that is what we talk about on this show. I hope you enjoy it. Chris, what's up, brother? I'm so excited to finally do this with you. I know we've been planning this for a long time. You're less than 2 weeks out from the Olympics, and you're making time to do this with me. I really appreciate it, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
No worries, man. Thanks for having me on the show. I know we've been talking about this for a long time, but who knew it was going to be when I was in Lafayette, I think 10 hours ahead of you. So yeah, it's, there's never a perfect time for anything, but you can always make time. So I'm excited to do this.
Well, thank you, man. So my goal with this show is to kind of talk about and discover how you've worked your way all the way to the top in such a competitive sport and stayed there for so long. You're a two-time Olympian and you're 2 weeks out of your third Olympics. And I know there are so many things that go into mastering any discipline. And so I'm hoping to uncover some of what has made you the athlete that you are. So first, can you explain what physically goes on in a luge run? Speed, G-forces, turns, all of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's probably a lot of listeners at home who have, you know, they might have heard of luge, but they've never seen it. So to kind of describe what luge is, essentially it's ultimate sledding, where we go down a mile-long sheet of ice, and there's anywhere from 14 to, 22 curves. And essentially, we're just trying to go as fast as possible. So the way we start with luge is totally different than bobsled and skeleton. We have handles, we rock back and forth, and we pull off, and it's a complete upper body explosive movement. Then we have spikes that we tape to our gloves and we paddle into the ice. So our start only lasts a few seconds. So we'll pull off, and depending on how steep the ramp is, sometimes we can only paddle twice. Sometimes we can do 10 paddles. And so it goes from this really explosive movement, and it's the only time you can accelerate yourself down the track, to this finesse movement where it's this ballet going down the track where every muscle of the body controls the sled. Luge, it kind of looks like we just lay there, but everything we do is very subtle. And we've also been doing this 20 years. So we make it look pretty easy, but even sometimes I'm impressed with what some of the guys are able to pull off. And when we're going down the track, our steels are metal, and we're on ice. So there's very little friction. So we have this semi-sharp edge that's digging into the ice, and basically we're just trying to maintain this control of the sled, but it's where we are out of control a lot of times, or at least when you're trying to go really fast. And when you go into these corners, we pull up to 6-7 G's sometimes. My fastest speed is 93. It's a very interesting feeling. When I say interesting, I mean, you have to feel the pressure in the corner, know how high you are in the corner, and that can lead to you figuring out how hard you need to drive out. So it's a very feeling-based sport that takes decades to truly master. What it feels like, it really feels like someone's kind of just pressing down on you. So your head weighs 20 pounds. So under 1G, it's 20 pounds. 2Gs, now you kind of multiply that by 2, your head weighs 40 pounds. So when we're going through these corners at 5Gs, it's a full strain on your neck. You're fighting to keep your head up. We actually make these small harnesses that we attach to our legs that we clip onto our helmet so our head won't just go back and smack the ice. It'll actually catch us. So sometimes it's really intense. And the whole time we're doing this and we're doing this blind, we're trying not to look because we're going feet first with our head back. And if you look where you're going, it's unaerodynamic. So the whole time that you're trying to feel the track, look for your small visual cues. And when I say look for your visual cues, I mean your head's back. So sometimes you're looking at the very top of the curve. Sometimes you're looking for the sky out of the track. The second you can see sky, you're driving out. And we're basically just kind of feeling our way down the track, and hopefully you don't run into walls and crash. But it's a pretty steep learning curve. We crash a lot when we first start, but once we move our way up to the top of the track, which takes 5-6 years, then there's very, very minimal room for error. So it's an experience-based sport. It's a ton of fun when you're going down. It's like a sped up black and white movie where a lot of times you can't be looking forward because there's so much information that you have to process that it's best sometimes to kind of put the head back and just rely completely on feeling.
Right. And what's your top speed in this thing?
It depends on the track. Some tracks we don't actually go too fast, 70 miles an hour. I mean, I guess that's still fast. And some tracks were going over 90 miles an hour. So I think the fastest recorded luge speed is 96, and that's in Whistler, Canada. That track is insanely fast, where the bottom of that track just, and we're also doing 90 degree turns at, 70, 80 miles an hour. So it's fast, it's abrupt, and it's a ton of fun.
So I'm just trying to get a gauge of how terrifying this would be. What would it cost for you to do a naked run? Just dong flying around. what would that cost you?
Well, okay, so it depends on the conditions. When the ice is hard, at this point in my career, I'm pretty confident with myself, I could do it for a couple $100.
Okay.
But I mean, if you do crash, hit walls, mess up, you are in a very bad place. So I would want track conditions where the ice is a little soft, where you have more ability to drive the sled, then I'd feel pretty confident. But if it's race day ice where it's really hard, you're pushing the limits of your control with the sled onto the ice, it would take a couple $100. I haven't crashed yet this year, so I feel pretty confident in myself, but yeah, man, you're playing around with all your skin. You're playing around with your manhood. It wouldn't be good if you do mess up.
That is a much lower number than I thought you were going to throw out. I like it. It's not surprising coming from you. So you grew up, I think, near Lake Placid and began lugeing when you were 8. How serious? And I know you're a part of a special program out there for competitive athletes. Can you explain the school that you were a part of or the program and how serious that program was?
Yeah, so I started lugeing when I was 8 years old, and I was really lucky where I grew next to one of the only 2 luge tracks in the country. So at 8 years old, luge was pretty much ultimate sledding. So I loved sledding through the apple orchards that were close to my house. So luge was the largest sledding hill, and you didn't even want to go off the top. You were scared to keep moving up the track. So that was that's what I did every winter when I was 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old. And then the program stopped because they got rid of the old luge track, and they built a brand new track. And the problem was getting track time. National teams were training, other countries were coming there and training. So the program stopped because there just wasn't any more time for the local kids. And so I loved doing it. So my mom, asked around like how to continue on with the sport. And luckily, one of the development coaches was working this local program. And I don't think I got on the team because I was very good at first. I was just so enthusiastic. And basically if a coach told me like, chop off your right arm because it'll make you faster, I would chop off my right arm, even though that wouldn't make any sense. I would just all about the sport. I absolutely loved it. And I think that's why they let me on to the development team when I was 12 years old. And so then I was just in Lake Placid learning the sport, moving up the track, and the coaches saw something in me and they took me to Europe at the age of 13. So when I was 13 years old, when I was in eighth grade, I started traveling the world competing in the sport of luge. And I mean, not only did I love the sport, but I think what I loved the most was, meeting people from around the world, traveling to all these new places, learning about the culture. And it was kind of like, I needed to do well in order to keep living this crazy lifestyle. But school did not like that at all. So I remember, and this was before wireless internet. So we would have dial up, and every country had like a different plug. So you had to buy like 20 different plugs that you might have to use depending on the hotel. Then you had to call the access number for that country. You had to get calling cards, and getting homework to Europe was extremely difficult. So in eighth grade, my Spanish teacher gave all the homework that I was supposed to do to my mom, and my mom sent it to Europe, and it got to a location the day after I left. So then they forwarded it on, and again, it took a week, and I just kept missing it all over Europe. So I actually finally got it 2 days before heading back. So I was already doing other work, and I was like, I'm not even gonna deal with this Spanish. I got a huge packet, it's overwhelming. So I went to school like 2 days later, and I show up into my Spanish class, and the teacher was like, okay, where's the work I sent you? And I'm like, I didn't do it. I just got it 2 days ago. And she's like, well, you can just leave my class. And I'm like, okay. So basically I was kicked out of Spanish, and the school just didn't really want to work with me. So I had to go to a private school in Lake Placid to what was called the National Sports Academy. And that's basically where I put the focus on luge, and with a really high teacher to student ratio, like I really could focus on luge 100% and then basically get private tutored in the evenings or in the mornings. So that really allowed me to focus 100% like into luge at a really young age. And I think that was a big part of my success was just being able to put that amount of time and focus into such a specialized event.
What stuck out to me is one of the first things you said there about, if someone told you to cut your arm off because you would go faster, you would have done it. That's so different than my recollection of my childhood. I was just interested in playing. I was interested in playing and competing, but when it came to like really doing the hard work to get better, that didn't come into my life until much, much later. What do you think it was about your upbringing or about you as a person that made you so hungry to get better at that sport?
I don't know, but I know that a lot of my teammates hated me initially because here's this 13-year-old kid, and when they said, all right, we're going to warm up, we're going to run 4 laps around the gym, I was the guy that would do 6. I would always want to do more, and especially in summer training, I would always want to be the fastest person on the run or the fastest person swimming. We would always do either a run or a swim at 7:30 in the morning, and maybe it's just my competitive nature where I just wanted to, if you said do 4, I would do 6. Like I would always want to push myself. I guess I've always been that way where I really do enjoy pushing myself physically, mentally, And I don't know where that comes from, I guess. I just maybe think it's just something that I have, this just drive to want to do better. And, you know, if someone says this is going to help you, when I was an early kid, I was really impressionable. I was like, okay, yeah, like you're the coach, like I should listen to you. And I think that's also a big factor in my early success, where I never would say no to things. Like, I still have a hard time saying no to things, and I'm doing a lot better now, but it was like saying no. I always had a really hard time saying that. And yeah, I don't know. I love the sport so much that I wanted to be the best, and I would do whatever I could. I figured, you know, just put the time in and it'll happen. And to get to a certain level, that was the case. You just, if you show up every day, if you put in the effort, you might not reach to the top, but you will accelerate yourself to a really good place quickly if you just show up and you do the work on a consistent basis. And that's what I guess I did as a kid.
So how did they support you in terms of, like, how did they speak to you when it came to luge? Obviously they were super supportive. They found you a school that would allow you to focus on your sport. I'm guessing they traveled the world with you during these events, but how did they speak to you when it came to this, to your sport?
Yeah, well, so that's you would think that letting, you know, if your son was asked to go to Europe at 13 years old, you would want to go with them and travel with them, but they couldn't do that financially. They basically let me go to Europe at 13 years old with minimal supervision on a team that was primarily made up of 18, 19 year olds. And my first 2 months in Europe, basically on my own, I felt like I grew up like 4 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, just to allow their, it's the best thing that they could have done. Yeah. Those first couple months were extremely hard. You know, the older kids hated me. Here's this immature 13 year old. So it was a learning experience for sure. But I think that was the biggest thing that my parents did. They gave me the opportunity to grow up, to put me in a position where I could grow. And when it came to luge, they never forced me to do anything. I think maybe I was just so motivated where they were like, yeah, if you want to do it, go for it. We're going to allow you to do that. Where I wasn't allowed to do everything just because I was so young, but my parents, you know, they didn't say no to me. And as long as I was passionate about something, if I really wanted to do it and was putting the time in, that's when they just allowed me to do it. And that's the biggest thing I feel that my parents did, is that they just let me run wild with my passion. And I think that was like the greatest way they could have supported me.
Yeah. That's huge, man. I mean, to be away from your child for that long, I'm sure was very painful for them at times and scary. So that is huge. So I have this model that I want to run by you just to see if it resonates with you and your kind of progression. So it's called the A to B model. And A is where we are right now, and B is where we want to go. And this you can use this model for any goal in the world. And so let's use a basketball player, and their end goal is that they want to make it to the NBA. When anyone first starts out playing basketball, one thing I forgot to add. So the A to B model is like a funnel. So A is where is at the wide part of the funnel, and B is at the narrow part. In the beginning of playing basketball, all you have to do to move towards B is just dribble the ball down the court. You don't need to know how to run plays. You don't need to know any kind of strategy. The only thing you need to do to get better and move closer to your goal is dribble the ball in a certain direction. When you get to, say, seventh or eighth grade, you need to know how to pass and shoot. When you get to high school, you need to know a little bit of strategy. You need to show up for games every day. You need to show up for practice every day. You get to college, you have to start lifting weights. You have to take your studies seriously. And to move towards the MBA, you have like every single decision that you make in life has to be directly related to you playing basketball. Your relationships have to be on point. You have to be remove as much stress as possible. You have to understand the game inside and out, and any decision outside of that funnel, right? It gets narrower and narrower the closer you get to B. Any decision outside of that funnel is called a choice point. And a choice point, you can either choose to get back into the zone of optimal behavior, which is inside that funnel, or you can quit and choose a new goal. So the reason I brought that up is, how over time did you basically become like a professional? How did you narrow those behaviors? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was thinking at the A to B point, man, it's kind of like a funnel and also kind of like one of those like twirly straws that has all the loops in it. And
absolutely.
It's never a straight line. But I think the reason I say it's like one of those little twirly straws is with luge, it really is an experience-based sport. So you have to start when you're really young. If you start past the age of 17, you're not going to make it. You really have to develop at the junior level in order to have success at the senior level. So for me, it's a choice really early on in life that you make. You love the sport, but also because like I travel from the middle of September through the middle of March. I physically can't go to school. And there's all these sacrifices that you have to make at a really early age where you have to give up the fact that you have to understand that you're physically not going to go to college. You're going to have to do it all online if you want to do school while doing the sport. You're not going to have normal relationships. We're gone way too much. Since June 2015, I've only spent more than 2 weeks in a single location before either flying to a new place or driving to another country 3 times.
Wow.
So I'm at like almost 30 months and it's 2 weeks in a single location. So you have to sacrifice your normal relationships. You have to sacrifice school. So luge really early on, it does consume you. Either you make it or you don't in this sport. It is an amateur sport, so either you work hard and you know these choice points that you talk about. It's like, okay, I need to finance myself. How am I going to do that? Am I going to do a job? Am I going to go credit cards? What are your options? So I think with luge, what it comes down to is, you know, a lot of put the end goal as the Olympics or doing well in the Olympics, and you really have to stay the course and understand that you're going to just have to make a ton of sacrifices. And once you become okay with making all of these different sacrifices, I think that's when you start becoming a professional in luge, especially as an American. A lot of tracks are in Europe, so the Europeans never have to leave their homes as long as we do. They can have pretty normal lives. The longest they're going to travel is 3 weeks, and that's when they come to North America. First half was 10 weeks. This is going to be 9 weeks. So as a U.S. athlete, as a Canadian athlete, as a Russian athlete, like you're on the road and you have to sacrifice everything. And that's when you become a professional. When you sacrifice everything for the sport, you put yourself in a position where, hey, either you're going to commit 100%, you're going to put everything you can in it, or you're not. And the second you don't put everything into the sport, you should walk away because this sport isn't going to give back to you in a meaningful way. So it really is accepting the fact that you have to give up everything. I think that's what makes a professional amateur athlete. And that comes with, you know, okay, I need to learn how to put my head back and not look while going down. And for years, you're going to hit walls until you figure out how to feel the pressures properly. And depending on the ice and your setup, know how to make it through those corners. And you're going to have to take crashes. You're going to have to crash in order to learn how to go fast. And then you come into this sled setup. We have five different variables just on our steels that we're adjusting every week to try to make the thing run faster. So, all right, now you've got to be an engineer. I don't know if you like math or whatnot, but guess what? You're going to have to learn how to set up your sled and basically become an engineer. So it's these sacrifices and realizations that you have to do way more than you ever thought. And the second you don't willingly accept that, that's when you don't make it to the NBA. That's when you don't get to, you know, your end point. And it's tough after so many years trying to relearn. And that's why I say it's like a curly straw, because this sport is a technology driven sport where you'll have great years. And then the next year, you have no idea why you're going slow. You feel better. You're pulling a faster start. You have more experience down the track. So it doesn't make sense to you why you should be going slower. But, you know, technology plays a huge part and you've got to, you know, try to figure it out. So it really is about dedication. It's not about, you know, you can have a passion for so long, but it really comes to just being really dedicated and doing things that suck at times. So I would say that's kind of my AB model. It's this curly straw of life and you have all of these change points and yeah, you will always have to make the decision for luge. And the second you can't do that, man, it's an amateur sport. Get out, because you got to make money somehow.
I love what you said there at the end about dedication, because I think that too many people think that they have to feel motivated 24/7, right? They have to feel this burning passion to get in the gym or on the track every single day.
That's wrong.
Inspiring. Right. So how does that... When is the first time you feel like you made that decision? Like I don't feel super motivated right now, but I am fully committed to being the best athlete I can possibly be.
Oh man, I think, you know what? I really do believe about luge, and I really think it's good for people is fear. Like there's so much we can learn from fear. With luge, like I can't tell you how many times I've been terrified to go down the track where like I just crashed two runs in a row, my body hurts, but I've got to take this third run. Like we have three training runs, I've crashed two of them, I don't want to do this again, like I hate everything about this right now, but guess what, I've got to go up there and I've got to take this third run. So I think that's what luge really does to you at a young age. You have to overcome this fear. And yeah, it's scary doing something you've never done before, working your way up these tracks. And there's always the risk that you're going to fail. You're going to hit walls. You're going to physically hurt. You could physically hurt yourself. But you do have the ability to execute your game plan. You do have the ability to make it to the bottom. And either you're going to trust your ability, you're going to commit to your game plan, you're going to push past this terrible feeling that you could crash. But I think that is, for me, probably what helped me out in life more than anything else, was understanding how to get out of your comfort zone and be okay with it, even if it's absolutely terrifying. And just those feelings of growing up, like pushing yourself at like 14 years old to make it to the very tops of these tracks where no one else is doing it. I'm racing against guys that are 4 years older than me and being the youngest person at the top of the track. Like first off, that's a little motivating, but at the second time, like you're terrified, but you're either going to just, you know, not listen to the fear, or, but it's good to understand fear. I'm not saying like, oh, just push past the fear. It's good to feel fear, but you have to use that in a positive way.
I remember the first time I met you in Lake Powell, we were just a couple guys on a jet ski. we jet skied over to some cliffs and you asked if I wanted to jump off the cliffs. And so I go up and I jump. I think it's about 50 feet. So, you know, not a small one, but not the biggest that we jumped. And then you climb up there and I'm sitting back on the jet ski and you start acting kind of weird. Like your arms are doing something weird. And I'm thinking to myself, holy shit, is this guy, is he going to be okay? Is he gonna have to climb down? I didn't know you at this point. And then you just do a gainer, just a beautiful gainer off of this 50-foot cliff. What goes through your head during moments like that? Or, you know, the scenario you just gave where you had two crashes and you have to go up for your third event. Are you aware of what's going on in your head and kind of that voice that overrides that fear? What does that sound like?
Oh man. Yeah, man, Lake Powell is absolutely amazing. There's some great cliffs to jump off of. That sums it up though. Like I guess what I've learned how to do really well is visualization. So basically trying to imagine performing whatever act you're going to do. Like, so probably the reason I was like moving my arms up there was to like, just basically make sure that like, okay, like I know that like I can jump out, arms are going to work, come around. Okay. Land. Like that was like a visualization. Like even though I've never done it off this cliff, I'm not exactly sure the height. I know that I have the ability in my body to make it around pretty much no matter what. So it's just getting into the mindset of knowing exactly what you need to do. And yeah, absolutely. It's terrifying. Like I remember on that trip, I actually jumped a really big cliff that was way bigger than I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And that was absolutely terrifying. But the moment you're in the air, the moment you're actually physically doing that thing, it's like the fear is out. Like I'm so committed. So maybe the reason I love it is I have this ADHD brain that is all over the place. And luge to me is the moment. It's kind of like this meditation where I'm so completely in the moment. I have no other, I can't think about anything else. Kind of like when I'm in the air, like I love cliff jumping for that, where it's this beautiful, you know, 2-3 second moment where I'm like performing these tricks, and you have to be so focused, so like mentally ready and like connected that it's this ability of me to like finally like have this calmness in my life. Like my favorite place is the Audubon. Just because you drive your car as fast as possible and you have all these inputs coming in and you're 100% focused in the zone, and it's like, it's kind of like peaceful for me. Mm-hmm. So before like I'm doing luge and like I'm about to crash, like I am doing mine runs. I'm going over all of the curves in my head and I'm trying to do it even a little faster in my head than I am going down, just so I know what I have to do exactly when I have to do it. And that's something that, you know, we can all practice. I even do it for like lifting, like for like snatches and cleans. I'm thinking about like, okay, body positions even before you do it. So you're like, okay, you want to feel this, and then, you know, just 100% exertion, but you need to be in the right position before you just, you know, give it everything you have. Right. And so if you think about that, it's like those little cues will kick in the moment. And, yeah, that's something that luge has taught me. It's a really weird skill that I think is applicable to almost anything in life. Like before, like meetings, just visualizing how it's going to go, like big points of the conversation. It's all really about just thinking forward a little bit and just programming your body to react however it needs to react.
And then you're also practicing and kind of like flexing this muscle of acting despite feeling fear. You know, a lot of people, and me included at times, I'll feel afraid of something physically, for instance. And because I have that feeling, it kind of tells my brain, like, that's unsafe, that's not okay to do, right? But you're so practiced in acting despite that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And now it's to the point in luge where I'm like, man, I don't get scared as much as I used to. And maybe that's an issue. Maybe I need to be more scared. So it, like, you know, it helps my body fire more. But I think one of my favorite moments of my life was when I helped my aunt. So she loves off-roading, and actually you did this, in Moab. So my aunt has this FJ that she's built, she's lifted it. She's put a ton of money and all of her passion into this, where this is kind of her getaway in life right now. And on Hell's Revenge, there's this, near the lookout point, there's this place called Hell's Gate, and it's for experts only. You need a built vehicle, and it's, if you go onto YouTube, you'll see Jeeps just rolling down this thing. Like, it's terrifying. And so my aunt's had this FJ for years, and she doesn't want to crash it. And I've worked with her a couple times. Like, I've spotted her, and we just get each other. I know, like, the inputs that she needs to, like, to make the turns. We have the right cues. And so she was like, you know what, Chris, I feel comfortable with you guiding me up the gate. And I'm like, Deborah, like I would absolutely do it. Like, I'll walk through it. And if I don't feel comfortable doing this for you, like, we won't do it. And I walked in, I'm like, Deborah, you've got this. And this is something that she's been writing me for like an entire year. She's like, I can't wait to go and try to do the gate. And she was so terrified and nervous, and it's because she's never done it before. And I'm like, I don't want to pressure you at all to do this. So we're not doing this unless you're like 100% confident. And I'm like, but you know what you should do, Deborah? Just get in your FJ and just drive up to the start and see how you feel like at the very start. And so she gets in and she starts driving, and she gets to the starting point. And she's like, it just basically all of the fear just turned off in her. And she just, you know, kept driving. She just started like going. And so I had to like run and catch up to her, like to start spotting. But she just felt that good. Like, once she got into the moment, and she knew that her body could do this, her FJ could do this, then she just took off and she did it flawlessly. And that was like the biggest accomplishment of her life. And I felt so good. Like, the fact that, like, cause I've been in that situation so many times, and I'm like, if you just get to that starting point, that's when it all changes.
Wow. That's awesome, man. So your first Olympics, you had already been training for 12 years, I think. It was 2008. Can you describe what that first Olympics was like? You'd been training for this one thing for so long, and then you finally made it to compete with the best in the world. What was that like?
Oh, man, it's, you know, making the Olympics is almost, it's almost a relief, because you have to go through all these race-offs. You know, people are, you're never fully safe. Like, any race you mess up, like, someone else could take your spot. So actually, when I qualified for the Olympics, it was like this moment of relief, because it's something this has been your goal since day one, and you're fighting, and you're trying to execute your game plan. But you know, if you mess up a little bit, you know, someone else can take it. So actually, like, when I qualified for the Olympics, it was almost like this relief. And so in 2010 luge, we had a really bad accident on the last training run before the Olympics, where a Georgian luge athlete flew out of the track and died. Mm-hmm. And that was a really heavy experience, seeing that in person. And at the end of the day, we decided to race the next day. And we carried on as normal. And so the Olympics, that race, it didn't feel like the Olympics, just because this was kind of hanging over us the whole time. But in Sochi, my second Olympics, that was more of an Olympic experience, where it was the I was ranked fifth overall in the world going into that. And like the pressure, the competition, you want to do really well. You know, everyone in the world is watching you. Luge, no one watches luge except for the Olympics. So you only have that opportunity once every 4 years. And that was a really fun race. Feeling that energy from the crowd. We don't have 15,000 people watching our races typically. So like feeling the crowd, feeling the energy, being on the world's largest stage, that was really fun. At the end of the day, I really did enjoy that, because you were able to finally like share your experience, your hard work, your dedication with everyone else. So I would say that Sochi was a lot of fun. And being on the big stage, like, that's what we've wanted to do our entire lives. Like, you can either be really scared, like, oh man, the big stage, like, I better not mess up. Like, this is my opportunity. Or you can kind of look at it like, I've been doing this my whole life. There's a reason that I'm here. It's because I've put all this time in. Like, I'm going to go enjoy it. Like, there's so many different mindsets that you can have when approaching like big competitions. And I definitely like taking the, I'm here for a reason. I put the time in. Like, I can't go 110%. I can only give 100. So Don't worry.
Did that pressure, do you feel like the pressure of being at the Olympics brings out the best in you?
I feel like I'm someone who I thrive under pressure more so than not. I don't know if it's because I become like hyper focused, where I can just like tap into this like other mentality where it's like, okay, this is exactly what I'm going to do. Like, because the pressure's on, I'm going to execute this. There's, you know, no other thoughts in my head. So I think, yeah, I do really well under pressure.
I know a lot of people in CrossFit, they are most stressed out at regionals. A lot of the games athletes, and it's because they're so afraid that they won't make it to the games, right? They won't make it. They won't be able to play with the big boys at the games. And once they get to the games, they're able to relax. Like, this is the final. They're able to just go out there and do their best and not worry about qualifying or not. Does that resonate with you at all in relation to the Olympics?
100% that resonates with me. And it's, you know, it's the fear of failure. That's probably, you know, it drives a lot of people. You put your entire life into this. And if you're honestly like at the very best in your sport and you're like 100% confident, you might not feel that feel of failure just because you are so in your own like mindset, you're in your own like, you know, game plan. And that's a good place to be. But if you're really one of the like last people to get in, and you know, you've put this pressure on yourself, like, hey, you're letting everyone down if you don't do this. What about like sponsors, supporters? That fear of failure can drive you insane. You're like, oh, by the way, like my family booked all of their stuff for the Olympics back in October before I even made the team. But yeah, don't worry, Chris, you'll make it.
Right.
And it's like, oh, thanks, guys. I'll get there. Don't worry. So I mean, there's areas like that where, yeah, like mentally it's so hard to not think about that. Like you can always say that, oh no, you're a machine, don't think about that. But you know, it's kind of on the back of your mind sometimes where it's like, well, you know, I've got 8 people going to the Olympics already. They've spent, you know, tens of thousands of dollars and, yeah, don't mess up.
Wow. But talk about pressure.
Yeah, I think that's when people feel pressure the most is like once you're at the games, like that was your end goal. That was your, you know, point B. It's like everyone's there for you. Like everything has worked out to this point. And that's the mentality that you need to be in. Like I bet people perform a lot better under that. It's like, man, I just have to go out and give it my all. If I fail, it doesn't matter because I'm here and that's what matters.
Right.
But when you're at regionals or if you're at like, you know, the qualifying race, it's really hard to have that mentality because it's like, oh man, like this is everything. And once you do that, like I think it's a toxic way of thinking because it really doesn't allow you to be at your best. But it's, man, I think my favorite part about sports is the mental side, right? It's like your mind game, your approach, like why are you doing what you do? And that can affect performance so much.
So how do you get through that moment of, you know, you're in a qualifying meet, or I don't even know what y'all call it. I don't know if it's a meet, but you're in a qualifying event of some sort. You know, maybe you're 3 years out from the Olympics and you feel all of this pressure. How do you work through it mentally?
Yeah, it's, I think that's one thing I was able to do really well at a young age. I'll never forget like the Junior World Cups where you're on German tracks. Like when you're on your home track, you always want to do really well because you have more training there. So you should be doing better. But I remember looking at competitors when I was younger and I was like, you could see it in their eyes. Like they're too focused where they're so worried about like not messing up that they can't execute their game plan. So it's like, all right, this person's going to mess up. Like this person's going to mess up. You can just see it in them. And really for me, it came down to just execute your game plan, go over all the little things like training is really important, race like you train, because when you come to the race, I feel like if you want to perform like, oh, you know, this is race day, I have to perform better than I ever have before. that gets you out of your comfort zone again. Like, that gets you out of everything that you've done. Like, that takes away from everything you've worked on. If you're like, you know, now is the time to go 110%. No, training is when you were supposed to go 110%, and maybe you back off a little bit. So then you're like 100% able to perform what you've been doing. So for me, it's like, I've always had to try to train like I race, and treat the two about the same. So with luge, every training run, I'm trying to push it as hard as I can. And when you come to the races, you know, sometimes the ice gets a little colder, then it's, you know, then I can go 95%. Then I can even back off a little bit and I'll still have a really good result. Just because, you know, I put all of that time into training. So for me, that's how I've kind of approached things, where you can only execute your game plan. And if you feel like you're not prepared and you have to do something above and beyond what you normally do, you know what? Sometimes it might happen, but most of the time it's not going to.
Right. I see that. And the distinction here is so small, because what you're talking about is like little changes in preparation and in intensity. And it's all these little small details that go into your training that make it more, you know, game day like, so that when you show up on game day, on the event day, you are actually prepared and you don't feel like you have to do something outside of yourself. And one thing that I see all the time in CrossFit is the way that people train versus the way they do the CrossFit Open. And I'll take movement standards, for instance. They have this standard on handstand pushups where your feet have to cross a line at the top. 99% of people never practice that all year, even though we've done it, you know, three times, like three different CrossFit Opens in a row or something like that. They've had this standard, but people don't practice it all year long. So it comes up again and they're unprepared again. And then they have this feeling that they have to, you know, kind of pull something out of their ass.
Yeah. And that's never a good place to be. And I totally understand, like, from the weightlifting perspective, where you can't be going 100% in training all the time. So like, how do you pull that out in those type of competitions? But I think it's so important to at least be doing those movements, like, up to almost maximal effort at least once or twice before. But with luge, we're definitely trying to, you know, push the sleds a lot during the week. So when you come to race day, there's no surprises. And that helps build confidence, and, you know, confidence builds upon success.
Right. And it doesn't, just to take the weightlifting analogy, it doesn't have to be the same exact intensity, but it needs to be at least the same exact preparation, including mental, right? You have to go through the same warm up and you have to have the same level of focus, or at least as close to it as possible, if you want to set yourself up to really succeed when the pressure is on. So a few years ago, you were...
Yeah, and a lot of it's...
Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
No, I was just saying, a lot of it comes down to like mentality and focus and how you approach things. And yeah, you have to try to keep a similar approach, because all of a sudden you show up to that stadium and you're like, wow, there's so many people. Like, I have to not let everyone down. Like, I have to do this. But if you just approach it as you did in training, those people don't necessarily matter. And then that frees up your ability too.
So a few years ago, you were ranked third in the world. I think that's the same year that you beat the two-time champion Felix Loke. Is that correct?
Yeah, Felix Loke.
He was the two-time Olympic champion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what was that experience?
Yeah, he likes to win all the big races.
Gotcha. So what was it like beating someone that was the absolute best in the world?
Oh man, it's yeah, like winning World Cups and being on top and having like the World Cup leader bib. It's man, it's kind of overwhelming, because you start as this kid. I mean, I started luge at 13 years old, and like 13 years later, like you're slowly working up the ranks. It really is an experience-based sport, and you have all the greats in luge who, like Armin Zeugler and Felix Locke and all these guys that you always kind of idolize. And the next thing you know, you're up with them. You're actually like fighting them for the top spot. And when you finally come out with like your first World Cup win, it's just, you know, it's almost like, it was peaceful. It was like, I came up and I saw the one and I knew that like I won the World Cup, and it's like, you have all this emotion and like, you have all the like, you know, congratulations, blah, blah, blah. But like at the end, it was kind of like, I was just really at peace with myself just because like, man, all of this hard work, it was completely worth it. And I think that's what's going to resonate with me the most is like, you know, it really, motivation, it has to be intrinsic. Like for me, that was the goal for my entire life, was to like, you know, get to the top of the international podium in a World Cup. Like obviously the Olympics is the real goal. I have 2 fourth place finishes at World Championships, so I definitely want to get on the podium there, but I'll take a World Cup win and totally count that as like a career success, that you've done all of the right things. You've made all of the right decisions. And like, obviously I'm still hungry for more. Like that's why I'm still doing the sport even years after my first World Cup win. But getting there, it was this very peaceful thing where internally you're like, okay, like I can retire now. I'm not going to, but like, I feel that it's okay. I can retire because this is what I've been working for my entire life.
That's amazing. So you have 20 years, over 20 years of experience training, and you're about to enter your third Olympics. So you have a ton of personal experience, and you've also been in contact with an enormous amount of elite athletes. What are a couple of the most common mental challenges that athletes go through at the top level in your experience?
Man, so I'm really close with a lot of the amateur sports, like the small ones, bobsled, skeleton, luge. We all train pretty much in the same place, so I get to see the struggles of them. Honestly, it's something different than you would ever believe. It's financially how to kind of keep going with it. Like I know the number two skeleton athlete, he's at home right now and he's working and he's going to the Olympics and like 2 weeks. And that's honestly like a huge component of it. That's a big struggle that we always deal with is finance and like basically creating a life outside of the sport, the transition from sport into the real world. Even though you don't want to think about it, man, like once the Olympics ends, you just get dropped on your ass unless you've like built a plan, like a succession plan.
Yeah.
And these are all like very real things that no one wants to talk about, but I think they plague most people's minds. Where with the sport, yeah, you might have to fight injury. You might have to change your lifting programs because of, you know, it's just not working or whatnot, or you have to, you know, find a new sled or look for new materials because it's just not working. But at the end of the day, like these are really small sports, and what are you going to do outside of sport is probably more on the mind of every like small NGB, like national governing body athlete. It's not like, oh, like what house am I going to buy? It's like, shit, what am I going to do from here? that's the biggest mental stress that I think athletes face. Yeah, honestly, I would say that's probably the biggest stress that most athletes face.
Yeah, that is surprising, but it makes perfect sense because on one hand, it's physically taking away from, you know, you recovering from training and stuff like that. But more than anything, it's mentally draining and can be a huge distraction, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we'll always have like, oh, how can we recover better? Like, oh, like, you know, how can we plan our schedule so we're not traveling every day of the year? Like, those are all things that we can do better and take into consideration. Like, what training facilities are we going to use in the off season? how are we going to be able to lift in Altenburg, Germany, when all of the bars are bent? Like, you know, should we bring our own bar? How do we bring our own bar? Like, those are like all little things. But I think what gets us most is, how are we going to transition out of this? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've sacrificed everything. What's next?
Wow. So kind of going along that same vein, this makes it even more challenging. I've had this belief for a while that to be world-class at anything, you have to be sort of out of balance in other areas of life, right? You have to be so focused on this one thing that it's almost inevitable that certain areas of your life will get a little neglected. That doesn't necessarily fit with how I know you. You seem to be fulfilled. You seem to be, you know, having fun with friends and having a life outside of the sport. So what would you say about that belief that I have, given your experience, but also considering what you know of your peers?
I still think that's completely accurate. Like, I would say my life was very out of balance when it came to family, where I sacrificed relationship with my sisters. I just was never home for them. And when I was home, I was at the training center training. So like, I lost a decade with them. So there's for sure sacrifices that you make. I do try to have a balanced life, because I think mentally that's so important. It's kind of like, if you talk about stocks, like diversifying your portfolio. If you only have everything in one stock, like if that goes down, I mean, your whole world goes down.
Right.
So I've always liked kind of, you know, playing around. Like, of course, like, you know, job number one is to be a world-class athlete, but also like I'm the chair athlete of the FIL Athletes Commission. I sit on the executive board of our national governing body. Like, so USA Luge, I sit on the executive board of the Federation of International Luge. I take training really seriously, but I travel so much where I've learned how to work out and what I need for my body. So it's, my body is adapted to traveling. And I'm really fortunate for that. Like, that really does make my life so much easier, where I can travel, I can visit friends. I don't have any off days though. So that's like another thing that I sacrifice. I sacrifice off days. I sacrifice time with family, financially. I mean, if you're going to train 100%, like, you can't really have a job. So I would say that, that picture fits perfectly with Luge. I'm definitely loaded on the athletic side, the friendship side, the life experience side, but you know, those close, intimate relationships really do suffer from such prolonged travel. And because I travel so much and I work out the other time, yeah, finances aren't the best, but I make it work. And I love what I do. And for sure, I'm out of balance in places, but I wouldn't have it any other way right now.
I got a couple more questions for you, and then we'll wrap it up. What athlete do you most look up to currently, past or present?
That's a really good question. Actually one athlete that really does, impress me with his ability to, I feel like, have a balanced life. It's skier Gus Kenworthy. He, after Sochi, he came out as being gay, and initially he didn't really feel like he didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but he's basically, I mean, he's just done everything since then. He's really just become the best him. Like, he's super successful in skiing. He trains really hard. He has great relationships in his life, and he's just doing everything. He's very fulfilling. He's thoughtful. He gives back. And, you know, those are the type of athletes that I look up to, someone who can do really well in their sport and also succeed in other areas of their life. And I think that's, you know, so important. I mean, to be a good athlete is one thing, but what you're able to give back and being a good athlete, it just makes your ability to help out others, just the potential is so much higher. So that's why I always get frustrated with like professional athletes who are just like terrible people, but doing well. It's like, man, you have the biggest opportunity to help out so many other people. And it's just so frustrating. So I would say he's an awesome guy to look towards. And plus he throws down crazy tricks. Talk about being scared. The tricks that they're throwing off these massive jumps are absolutely insane. So check him out at the Olympics. I'm sure he'll do really well for Team USA.
Hell yeah. It's interesting you bring up the point about like giving back. I just finished the Andre Agassi autobiography, and he spent, you know, for those listening, he's one of the best tennis players that ever lived. And he spent most of his life absolutely hating tennis. But he, you know, he started as young as you did, Chris, maybe even younger. And he spent most of his life hating tennis. And it wasn't until he started his own foundation to give back to, you know, underprivileged youth that he really fell in love with it, because he fell in love with, I think, the person that he had become, right? He was someone that was making a contribution to those that, to those in need. And so he was able to appreciate the sport because that was what gave him the ability to make that contribution.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I always find that giving back is so fulfilling, and not only does it like fill you up personally, but it provides so many better opportunities like later on to help out others and just make these amazing connections and relationships with people and organizations. So I always find that, you know, giving back has always made me feel better about what I'm doing, but it also, you know, provides me so many other opportunities that I never would have known about. That's kind of why I became an athlete rep, was to help give back to my luge community. And I think it was one of the best things I've ever done in my career. So yeah, giving back it changes who you are, and you never know who you're going to be or what you're going to want to do until you actually find that. So I completely agree with that. Like right now, like I'm very frustrated with my sled. Like I know it's 2 weeks away from the Olympics, and I really do want to put on the best performance that I can, and working my sled is really frustrating right now, but I love being able to step aside from that and then just go right into my athlete representative role and help out a lot of other athletes. It really does kind of help center me. And just, you know, when I finish that, I feel like I'm at peace, I'm balanced, and then I can go right back to the sled.
So cool, man. So my last question for you, you're going into the Olympics, it's your third Olympics. And I know that you've had a challenging year, right? It hadn't been your most competitive year. So what are you doing? What's going on in your head? How are you preparing yourself mentally to have an optimal performance?
Yeah, I haven't been getting the results that I'm looking for this season, but I'm having better starts. Like my start has improved. I've never started this fast before, where I've actually had first place starts this season, consistently in the top seven on the start. So that's good. My sliding is there. I know that hasn't gone away. I haven't fallen off with my sliding. And I know that a lot of it does come down to aerodynamics and the design of your sled and the variables of the sled. And it's, even though it's really frustrating that things aren't working right now, I do know that everything else is going really well. So when that does click, it can all come together. So it's like, even though like I'm down right now, sometimes it doesn't feel like there's a lot of hope, I know that I've put in the time and it still can all work. And this is the last World Cup I have this week to get, you know, at least a little bit of progress done on the sled. But I have a game plan. I have a great support staff of coaches that have been helping me out. And, you know, it will come around. It has in the past. And you just have to stay focused and determined. And even though, like, I'll be down at times, again, like, I know that I want this and I will put in the time. So it's the hardest thing is just to consistently do this day in and day out, knowing you haven't had success and knowing it's there, but you just don't see it. But I don't ever give up, and I will pull all nighters working on my sled until it is finished.
I don't doubt it, man. Well, your dedication, like you kind of started this whole thing off, that the dedication that you have to your craft is really inspiring. You know, I've worked hard for a lot of things in my life, but the level of persistence and time that you've put into this, I can hardly even imagine. So we're all rooting for you, bro. I know you're gonna put on the best performance of your life and give them hell. Thank you so much for your time, Chris.
Dude, I look forward to it. Yeah, Mike, thanks so much for setting this up. This was a lot of fun. And yeah, man, I can't wait to see you this summer. Hopefully we'll do something crazy again.
Let's do it, man. Have a great day. Thank you.
All right, take it easy.